Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and I'm reading today from the words of John Newton, his autobiography. John Newton being the author of Amazing Grace, and we know him for some other things too. We'll be reading about those. We're in chapter 4. This book is available, by the way, from Kriegel Publications. It's a book that was put out by them in 2003, almost 20 years ago. We're going to talk now about a voyage to Africa. When I began this series of letters, I intended to say no more of myself than might be necessary to illustrate the wonders of divine providence and grace in my life, but I was later encouraged to expand upon my original plan. Among other things, I was asked for a more detailed account of my courtship. On this point, I thought it was fitting for me to be very brief, but I complied with my readers' wishes. This seems to be a proper place to tell you how things stood when I left England. When my attraction to my beloved was first evident, both of us were so young that no one but myself considered it seriously. It served for tea table talk among our friends, and nothing further was expected from it. My love seemed to have abiding effects, so that in 2 years it had not let up. It especially caused me to act without any regard to prudence or self-interest or my father's plans. There continued a coolness between him and the family. As a result, her parents began to consider our eventual marriage as a matter of consequence. When I took my last leave of them, her mother expressed the most tender affection for me, as if I had been her own child. She told me that she had no objections to our engagement at a more mature age and with a settled future in view. Yet, as things then stood, she thought herself obliged to interfere. She therefore wished that I would not think of returning to their house unless her daughter was away from home, until such time as I could either entirely give up my intentions or I could assure her that I had my father's express consent to continue. It was a difficult parting, but even though she was young, light-hearted, and quite unpracticed in such matters, she was directed to take a pleasant but neutral position towards me. A positive encouragement or an absolute refusal would have both posed equal though different disadvantages. But without much study on her part, she was always upon her guard. She had insight to see her absolute power over me and the good sense to make a proper use of it. She would neither understand my hints nor give me room to come to a direct explanation. She said that from the first discovery of my regard for her, and long before, the thought was agreeable to her. Therefore, she had often an unaccountable impression that sooner or later she should be mine. Upon these terms, we parted. I return to my voyage now. During our passage to Madeira, I fell prey to the most depressed thoughts. Although I well deserved all I met with, and the captain might have been justified if he had carried his resentment still further, yet my pride at that time suggested that I had been terribly insulted. Excuse me. This so worked upon my wicked heart that I actually formed plans to kill him. This was one reason that made me willing to prolong my own life. I was sometimes divided between killing the captain and killing myself, not thinking it practicable to carry out both plans. The Lord had now, to all appearances, given me up to a hardness of heart under his judgment. I was capable of anything. I had not the least fear of God before my eyes, nor, so far as I remember, the least sensibility of conscience. I was possessed by so strong a spirit of delusion that I believed my own lie, and was firmly persuaded that after death I should cease to be. And yet the Lord preserved me. As some moments of sober reflection would at times take place. When I had chosen death rather than life, a ray of hope would come in. There was little probability, however, for a hope that I would yet see better days, and that I might again return to England and have my wishes crowned, that is, if I did not wilfully throw life away. My love was now the only restraint I had left. Though I neither feared God nor regarded man, I could not bear that she should think poorly of me when I was dead. In the outward concerns of life, divine providence often employs the weakest means to produce great effects upon their common influence, for instance, when a disease is removed by a fright. Such means I found then. This single thought, which had not restrained me from a thousand smaller evils, proved my only and effectual barrier against the greatest and most fatal temptations. How long I could have maintained this conflict, or what, humanly speaking, would have been the consequences of my continuing in that situation, I cannot say. The Lord, whom I seldom thought of, knew my danger and was providing for my deliverance. I had determined two things while at Plymouth, that I would not go to India and that I would go to Guinea. And such indeed was the Lord's will concerning me, but they were to be accomplished in His way and not in mine. We had been at Madeira some time. The business of the fleet was completed, and we were to sail the following day. On that memorable morning, I was late in bed. I would have slept longer, but one of the midshipmen, an old companion, came down below decks and, between jest and earnestness, urged me to get up. Since I did not immediately comply, he cut down the hammock in which I lay, which forced me to dress. I was very angry, but I dared not resent it. I was little aware how much his whim would affect me. This person, who had no plan in what he did, was the messenger of God's providence. I said little, but went upon deck, where I that moment saw a man putting his clothes into a boat. He told me he was going to leave us. Upon inquiring, I was informed that two men from a Guinea ship, which lay near us, had entered on board the Harwich, and that the Commodore, Sir George Pocock, had ordered the captain to send two others in their place. My heart instantly burned like fire. I begged for the boat to be detained for a few minutes. I ran to the lieutenant, and I begged him to intercede with the captain that I might be dismissed. Although I had been formerly upon ill terms with these officers, and had crossed them all at one time or another, yet they had pitied my case, and were ready to help me now. When we were at Plymouth, the captain had refused to exchange me at the request of Admiral Medley, but was now easily prevailed on. In a little more than half an hour, from my being asleep in bed, I was discharged and safe on board another ship. This was one of the many critical turns of my life in which the Lord was pleased to display His providence and care by causing many unexpected circumstances to concur in almost an instant of time. These sudden opportunities were several times repeated. Each of them brought me into an entirely new scene of action, and they were usually delayed to almost the last possible moment in which they could have taken place. The ship I went on board was bound for Sierra Leone and the adjacent parts of what is called the windward coast of Africa. The commander, I found, was acquainted with my father. He received me very kindly and offered seemingly sincere promises of assistance. I believe he would have been my friend, but without learning the least lesson from my former mistakes and troubles, I pursued the same course. If possible, I acted much worse. On board the Harwich, though my principles were totally corrupted, at first I was in some degree sedate and serious. Now, entering among strangers, I could appear without disguise. I well remember that while I was passing from the one ship to the other, this was one reason why I rejoiced in the exchange. One reflection I made upon the occasion was that I now might be as abandoned as I pleased without any control. From this time, I was exceedingly wretched indeed, little if anything short of that animated description of an almost irrecoverable state which we have in 2 Peter 2:14. And may I read it? Having eyes full of adultery, and that cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls, and heart they have exercised with covetous practices, cursed children. Now the footnote here adds that some contemporaries of Newton suggested that he exaggerated the extent of his wickedness. While Newton never explicitly says so, though, he hints here and in his other writings that he engaged in improper relations with female slaves. He wrote elsewhere of the predatory lust of the sailors for the female slaves, and he would later tell a friend that he was a slave to every customary vice. I not only sinned with a high hand myself, but made it my study to tempt and seduce others upon every occasion. I eagerly sought such occasions, sometimes to my own hazard and hurt. One natural consequence of this was a loss of favor with my new captain. Not that he was at all religious or disliked my wickedness, but I became careless and disobedient. I did not please him because I did not intend to, and since he had an odd temper likewise, we the more easily disagreed. Besides, I had a little of that unlucky wit that can multiply troubles and enemies to its possessor. Upon some imagined affront, I made up a song in which I ridiculed his ship, his command, and his person, and I taught it to the whole ship's company. Such was the ungrateful return I made for his offers of friendship and protection. I had mentioned no names, but the allusion was plain, and he was no stranger either to the intention or the author. I shall say no more of this part of my story. Let it be buried in eternal silence. But let me not fail to praise that grace which could pardon, that blood which could expiate such sins as mine. Yea, the Ethiopian may change his skin, and the leopard his spots. I, who was the willing slave of every evil, possessed with a legion of unclean spirits, have been spared, saved, and changed to stand as a monument of his almighty power forever. Thus I went on for about 6 months, by which time the ship was preparing to leave the coast. A few days before she sailed, the captain died. I was not upon much better terms with his mate, who now succeeded to the command, and he had upon some occasions treated me ill. I had no doubt that if I went with him to the West Indies, he would put me on board a man of war. This, from what I had known already, was more dreadful to me than death. To avoid it, I determined to remain in Africa, and amused myself with many golden dreams that here I should find an opportunity of improving my fortune. Well, there are only a few white men settled upon that part of the coast now. There were many more at the time I was first there. Their business it was to purchase slaves along the adjacent rivers and countryside, and to sell them to the ships at an advanced price. One of these men, who had landed in Africa, indigent like myself, had acquired considerable wealth. He had recently been in England and was returning in the vessel I was in, of which he owned a quarter share. His example impressed me with hopes of the same success, and upon condition of entering into his service, I obtained my discharge from the ship. I did not take the precaution of agreeing upon terms of employment, but I trusted his generosity. I received no compensation for my time on board the ship, only a bill due the owners in England. This was never paid, since they went out of business before my return to England. The day the vessel sailed, I landed upon Banana Island with little more than the clothes upon my back, as if I had escaped shipwreck. Couple more end notes before we close today. Leaving the Royal Navy, Newton was exposed to the realities of the African slave trade firsthand. This ship was not mentioned or named by Newton, but was probably the Levant, a 200-ton slave vessel commanded by James Phelps. Another note, Newton and his new unnamed master would end up on Plantain Island, not banana, but plantain, 2 miles off the coast of today's Sierra Leone, in case you're trying to trace this journey. Next chapter is called Trials in West Africa, and we'll take care of that next time. Thank you for listening. Please look around my site before you leave. We have over 3,000 audios featuring some of the church's great preachers, persecution stories from North Korea in English and Korean, Bible studies on a number of subjects, a blog, and a store where you can purchase one of my books. If you desire more fellowship, please consider visiting my YouTube channel known as Pastor Lands, or contact me personally at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com. And I'll share details of the things that we do here locally. Or you can learn about our Saturday evening Zoom meeting. That's for men only, but on Tuesdays at noon, we meet with men and women and more. Young people can come to that too. Anyway, this is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and it is, as you are hearing it for the first time, May the 6th, 2022. Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.